Cecil found his companion interesting. "And at present you think her not wonderful, as far as life goes?" "Well, I must say, I've only seen her at Tunbridge Wells, where she was not wonderful, and at Florence. Since I came to Summer Street, she has been away. You saw her, didn't you, at Rome and in the Alps? Oh, I forgot. Of course, you knew her before. No, she wasn't wonderful in Florence, either, but I kept on expecting that she would be." "In what way?" Conversation had become agreeable to them, and they were pacing up and down the terrace.
"I could as easily tell you what tune she'll play next. There was simply the sense that she had found wings and meant to use them. I can show you a beautiful picture in my Italian diary. Miss Honeychurch as a kite, Miss Bartlett holding the string. Picture number 2, the string breaks."
The sketch was in his diary, but it had been made afterwards when he viewed things artistically. At the time, he had given surreptitious tugs to the string himself.
"But the string never broke?"
"No. I mightn't have seen Miss Honeychurch rise, but I should certainly have heard Miss Bartlett fall."
"It is broken now," said the young man in low, vibrating tones. Immediately he realized that of all the conceited, ludicrous, contemptible ways of announcing an engagement, this was the worst. He cursed his love of metaphor. Had he suggested that he was a star and that Lucy was soaring up to reach him?
"Broken? What do you mean?"
"I meant," said Cecil stiffly, "that she is going to marry me." The clergyman was conscious of some bitter disappointment, which he could not keep out of his voice.
"I am sorry. I must apologize. I had no idea you were intimate with her, or I should never have talked in this flippant, superficial way. Mr. Byers, you ought to have stopped me."
Cecil, who naturally preferred congratulations to apologies, drew down his mouth at the corners. Was this the reception his action would get from the world?
"I am sorry I have given you a shock," he said dryly.
"I fear that Lucy's choice does not meet with your approval."
"Not that, but you ought to have stopped me. I know Miss Honeychurch only a little, as time goes. Perhaps I oughtn't to have discussed her so freely with anyone. Certainly not with you."
"You are conscious of having said something indiscreet?" Mr. Beebe pulled himself together. Really, Mr. Vyse had the art of placing one in the most tiresome positions.
"No, I have said nothing indiscreet. I foresaw at Florence that her quiet, uneventful childhood must end. And it has ended. I realized dimly enough that she might take some momentous step. She has taken it. She has learnt what it is to love. The greatest lesson, some people will tell you, that our earthly life provides."
It was now time for him to wave his hat at the approaching trio.
"She's learned through you."
And if his voice was still clerical, it was now also sincere.
"Let it be your care that her knowledge is profitable to her."
"Grazie tante," said Cecil, who did not like parsons.
"Have you heard?"
shouted Mrs. Honeychurch as she toiled up the sloping garden.
"Oh, Mr. Beebe, have you heard the news?"
Freddy, now full of geniality, whistled the wedding march. Youth seldom criticizes the accomplished fact.
"Indeed I have," he cried.
He looked at Lucy. In her presence, he could not act the parson any longer.
"Mrs. Honeychurch, I'm going to do what I'm always supposed to do, but generally I'm too shy. I want to invoke every kind of blessing on them, grave and gay, great and small. I want them all their lives to be supremely good and supremely happy as husband and wife, as father and mother. And now I want my tea."
"You only asked for it just in time," the lady retorted.
How dare you be serious at Windy Corner?